Don't you know that I'll be around to guide you through your weakest moments, to leave them behind you, returning nightmares only shadows.
Talk to me a little bit about what was your, without giving any spoilers away, and without sort of going into things you can't, what was the, if you could pin it down, what was sort of the most exciting or unique or even just memorable moment? And maybe it doesn't have to be the most, it can be one of the most of this process of writing for the game. Was there any like single moment that stands out in your mind as like, oh wow, this is really special on some level?
There were a lot of moments like that. Just, you know, being able to write Billy Lurk and to write Dowd and all of these characters that I'd loved for a really long time, and to be involved in you know, their thought process and kind of their voice and so on, and that was really exciting. But how I'm going to answer this is, so at the E3 interviews that happened after the announcement, Harvey Smith talked a little bit about the new powers that Billy has and the kind of new kind of ways that you can explore the game and so on. And one of the things that he mentioned was this little talisman that Billy carries around called Rat Whispers. And it's like, it's a little bone charm that Billy's childhood sweetheart Deirdre gave to her many, many years ago. And it allows Billy and the player to listen to rats. So in other games, you know, the rats would be, you know, a menace. They would run after you. They would try and hurt you. You'd have to avoid the swarms. Yeah. But in this one, they are actually, they're not going to attack you. They're actually going to try and help you if they can. And so I had to write lines for rats. I had to get into the mind of a rat and write, you know, some of them were just like, oh, we have to impart, again, like the other bits of text that I had to write, like, oh, we have to impart this information. But some of them were just like, Just some lines that you think a rat would say, like things that preoccupy a rat. Write some of that, and so I ended up writing a bunch of lines for these little rats that have been, you know, present in the Dishonored universe since the inception. It's one of the more iconic images of the game.
Yes, absolutely.
I got to write the rat voices. That was when I realized, like, oh my god, like this is 100% Dishonored. I'm right in it.
That's really cool. That's where I think your skill as a writer eclipses mine, or one of the many points your skill as a creative writer eclipses mine. The moment where you kind of delve into that task and variety, and in my mind I'm like, what do rats think about? Do they want food? And I guess they probably want to promote their species. So
yeah, there are definitely lines about those two things, but
and we're worried about being safe.
Yeah. So I really loved how those came out as well. I think we got a really wonderful voice actress to come in and do those.
Cool.
And so I'm really excited to see how that sounds like in the game with everything when it's all set up and all the ambient stuff going on and just listening to these little rat voices. And yeah, I'm super excited about that.
Oh, that's really cool.
I think people are going to love it. Yeah.
I really like that shift, because the rats more than most other games, I think, like, there's a level at which the rats are so more terrifying than any other enemy I can think of, because you know, you have that skill. Like, I was shamefacedly admitting earlier when we weren't recording that I had not played Dishonored 2 yet. but in Dishonored 1, it's not a power fantasy. There's a lot of vulnerability in that game, but you can certainly kill guards easily enough. Like, it's not a big deal. But those rats, man, they will, they will get you every time.
Yep.
So, like, I even, like, more than other games, like, not just in the Dishonored universe, I think of those rats and I'm like, oh, get me away from them. So it's really it's really cool that they're going to be, like, friendly in the new game.
Yeah, they'll try and help you out.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that. That's very cool. So let me ask you this. Here's one we can sort of branch off a little bit. because any other bonus question, I'm gonna keep asking about plot, and eventually I'm just gonna cross a line. And I just don't want to do that. I really
want to tell you everything. Believe me, trust me, I would love to tell you everything, but I feel like you wouldn't forgive me, really, in the end. You would actually not want me to do this.
You know, and you're
then,
right.
And then all the people listening would be really, really upset with me. And so it's because I care about all of you I don't reveal everything that's happened. Also, I really care about my future with Arcane in case they want to do anything else with me. That would be really great.
Let me just say that thank you for your sacrifice. You're absolutely right. I actually don't want spoilers on it. I had to. I was recording a podcast with John Bernhard, which I don't know if it'll be out by the time this one comes out. I might push this one out early. I didn't actually go into what we talk about, although I think you'll like it because we talk a lot about, I'll tease it here, a lot about how Prey operates as the, literally the game entirely itself is a giant trolley problem. Because they bring that up at the beginning, and it's consistent throughout. It's his observation, not mine, but I like it, especially as I finish. But I wasn't done with the game when we talked, and I said, look, like, this game is going a lot longer than I thought it would, because, of course, the way I play it, you could finish that game in 10 hours, but I finished it in, I think I finished in about 30.
I think I got 40 good hours on that thing before I finished.
I could go back and easily put 10, 20 more into it, not without a sweat. So I had him spoil the ending for me, and you know, it didn't ruin it. It was there were elements of it where, like, I could see the ending coming. I could identify certain things. It was kind of rewarding in that respect. Yeah. But man, I do kind of regret not getting that emotional impact. So I don't want to. I don't want to. I don't want to lose that with the Death of the Outsider.
Okay, good. Because I'm not gonna.
You're not gonna.
I'm not gonna ruin this for you.
Okay.
Literally, I can't. Okay.
Wonderful. So let me ask. I'm trying to think of the good way to say this. The Death of the Outsider is part of this genre in my mind of taking a character in a video game or a movie or something like that, and then spinning off based on that individual character, right? Like, not exactly a spinoff, not exactly a, it's not in the sense of, like, you know, the Jeffersons come from All in the Family or something, but, like, literally a sort of, like, focal shift, where all of a sudden, like, someone who was, I wouldn't say the outsider's peripheral, but, like, sort of, like, a character who is necessarily on the periphery becomes a focal point. Like, that's such a, I mean, that's like a, it could be a very, it's a very 20th century thing, I think, in a lot of ways. I won't ask you your favorite one of those, because I think that might be a little nebulous, but if one comes to mind, feel free to talk about it. I'm trying to think of a good version, and, like, I can't. Like, I know there are a million out there, but if you could pick a peripheral character in literature or video games or anything like that, that you would most want to see sort of a refocused narrative on, who would it be?
Oh, that is actually a good question.
Thanks.
I was very confused, like, halfway through, but now actually this
I knew
is a good
you
question.
Were because it's like a very nebulous thing. It's like a basically, like,
what I like about this question, to kind of focus on the question a little bit more.
Please.
That's what such I like an about academic the question move. is because this is the question that fanfiction asks.
Ooh, interesting.
All the time. And I have written fanfiction, and I'm still sort of writing fanfiction. And so this is something that I find interesting to approach with some of my creative work in that, because it lets you kind of explore what characters that didn't get the focus that you would have wanted and questions that you don't think were answered. So So now to actually answer your question, I had an answer like 3 seconds ago. No, okay. So have you read The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt?
No, I've read The Secret History and
okay. Well, it's like The Secret History. It's like The Secret History, except a million times longer and not as interesting.
that seems to be the Donna Tartt refrain. It's like The Secret History, except somehow longer and less interesting.
Yeah, I liked it. It was. I got through it. I didn't. There was only one point where I stopped because I was just so fed up with the main character. But I think. But there's. So, like The Secret History, there's one main female character who is lusted after by the main character, but her kind of thoughts and feelings and drives and that none of that is actually explored.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have that in The Secret History with Camille is her name?
Yeah, wow, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you have in The Goldfinch with Pippa, who's this girl who, when Theo, the main character, this isn't spoilers, it happens in like the first 20 pages, Theo visits the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City with his mother, and there's some sort of attack, blows up the building, and his mother dies, and this girl, Pippa, who he'd noticed just prior to the attack because she was very pretty, she is injured as well, and this kind of whole string of situations come together, and this confluence of kind of characters meeting that means that Theo and Pippa actually meet while Pippa is still recovering mm-hmm. from that attack, and then they meet again much later after Pippa kind of is sent away to a boarding school that specializes in young girls that have undergone severe trauma. And who are also super wealthy, because you only get to have that kind of attention if you're super wealthy. But the only parts where she comes into it, the whole story is from Theo's perspective. And you have his kind of obsession with her, and you have his kind of lusting after her, and his feeling that their destinies are sort of linked because he has this association with her having seen her at the attack. But it doesn't, I don't actually know anything about Pippa really, and neither does Theo really. And so what I would have liked, this is a really long answer, I'm sorry. And this has nothing to do with video games at all. And I hope I'm not boring all of you.
That's what the bonus episodes
I would have absolutely loved a story from the point of view of Pippa and how Pippa experienced that, her relationship with Theo from her perspective, because she's obviously, I don't think, as interested in him as he is in her, and has a completely different understanding of their relationship. And also her time abroad at this boarding school with all these women, all these young women who had undergone something horrible, to have them necessitate this kind of constant care in their education. And that's my answer. I would like to see a novel from the point of view of Pippa from The Goldfinch.
Yeah, I like that a lot, because one of the things I realized as you were answering was in the complexity of your answer, which I really enjoyed. I realized that actually, like, this tradition of spinning out characters, it of course in fan fiction, but then also in sort of like what I guess has been popularly called like nerd culture, or I'm thinking particularly of like, you know, comic books, anime, stuff like that. There's like, you can read the X-Men, and then you can read, you know, there's sometimes like a branch off story of Havoc, or sometimes a branch off story of Cable or whatever, right? Like, that's a very popular trend there. But this question of like what would happen in literature if you did it necessitates a much more serious meditation. And I think like keys into the nature of why it would be interesting in the first place to bring a peripheral character to the center. I like that a lot. All right, well, I always ask people what game they'd make, but I've already asked you that, and we spent the whole podcast talking about the game you would love to make. So let me ask you a very casual sort of like breather question.
Okay.
What game? So a lot of games have been introduced in the last week and a half or so. I think a lot of very provocative ones. I know some people are disappointed with E3. I think people are always disappointed with E3 every single year. I don't treat it as an event. I just treat it as like a series of games that are announced that I get to watch the trailers of, which makes it way more fun. Well,
that is what it is. I mean,
that's certainly like, it used to be the whole trade show and all, and that was the thing, but now it's just, you know, I don't know why you'd sit through. Well, anyway, I'm not here to legislate how people enjoy gaming.
Every emotional response to E3 is valid. It's okay.
That's right. Yep. I'm not here to judge how you feel about E3. But which of the games are you most, well, not, it doesn't have to be from E3. It can be just in general. What upcoming game or besides Death of the Outsider, which of course has to be the answer, and I know is the true answer. But which game are you most excited about coming out that you've kind of heard buzz about or seen a trailer that kind of keys in something that you're interested in the last, I don't know, let's say, well, whatever, upcoming could be the modifier here.
Yeah, it's terrible because I'm so behind on games because I've been so involved with either making a game or or my thesis. And that's the paradox of working on a game is that you have no time to actually play a game. But I still have Horizon Zero Dawn and Nier Automata wrapped up on my shelf because I'm not letting myself play those because I know I'll get way too into it because I've heard so many good things about both of those. So I'm looking forward to playing those, but those aren't upcoming games. They're literally right next to my PS4.
They're upcoming for you.
They're upcoming for me, yeah.
I haven't played Horizon, but I'm excited for you to play Nier.
I've had people like yelling at me, like, Hazel, you have to play Nier. You'll love it. My initial reaction is like, oh, sure, will I? Really? But of course, like, I trust them. I trust my friends to not... let me down in this regard, but I've only heard really good things about Nier and Horizon, so looking forward to those. But like of what was shown at E3, I'm a huge fan of Life is Strange, and so really looking forward to this kind of prequel set of chapters that they're coming out with. And I know they're not made by Don't Nod, they're made by someone else that I can't remember, but it's because Don't Nod is still making the sequel, I think. And so I'm looking forward to seeing more Chloe because I really liked Chloe.
Of course, yeah.
And looking forward to like actually meeting Rachel Amber for the first time. So looking forward to Life is Strange Before the Storm. Yeah.
Excellent, nice, good answer. Actually, I that one for whatever reason has flown under the radar for me, and I guess it's because I'm not as into Life is Strange as I should be. I sort of missed the boat on the first episode, and now it feels like something huge that I have to really get into, but I keep abreast of it. It's such an interesting game. I'm very interested in that one, and I'm interested in thinking about the and I'm sure more think pieces and explanations and things like that will come out about it, but I'm very invested in seeing how the game looks and how people respond to sort of like the strange nascent like legal issues around the voice acting in it and stuff like that, the labor issues. It's very interesting, and I've already had a lot of internal arguments with myself about how much one should blame an entire game for a labor mishap or whatever. Like, it's a huge studio, there are a lot of moving parts, and then you kind of have your Marxism saying, like, well, you know what, nationalize the game industry, and it's a very complicated issue that it opens up a lot of things. And of course, with a game that's so narratively fascinating and thematically fascinating, that's kind of, I guess that's kind of a nice coincidence. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. I think, so you're going to wait to open Nier and Horizon until after your thesis is done?
Yeah. So my thesis is due September 30th. So I have a good 2 weeks of straining to not play Death of the Outsider.
Ooh,
because it comes out September 15th, so that's probably going to break down. I'll probably just be, I'll either be playing it or I'll be online constantly refreshing Twitter and Tumblr to see what people are reacting to it.
So the last 2 weeks of writing too.
I know, it's going to be, that's going to be rough, but I'll deal with it.
you'll handle it, I know you will. Yeah, I know. That's fantastic. I can't wait to hear your thoughts on Nier, actually. I have to finish it myself, but which gets me all sorts of anger from people who love Nier. But as you say, since I've sort of made this a job, you don't get to play as many games, which is kind of a crummy realization, but it's still fun. Well, thanks so much for being on. Again, Hazel's at Hazel Munforten, and Dishonored Death of the Outsider comes out September 15th.
Mm-hmm.
So go buy it.
Go pre-order it now. Yeah. Just go and do that.
if not just because it's a new Dishonored game, which should already convince you, but because we know the writing will be sterling. Well, thanks again, Hazel. Come back anytime, especially when you write your next AAA title.
Thank you.
All right.